بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. محمد محمد، اللعنة على أعدائهم أجمعين. We are discussing the subject of Maharim in Islam, and we already discussed in the three ways of Mahramiyat, which were Viladat and Rida' and Zawaj, that means birth and breastfeeding and marriage. These were three ways of becoming Mahram. And today's lesson, and we already discussed about the concept of Rabiba and Raba'id in the last class, if you remember. Rabiba means, we say Urdu mein kehte hain le palak betiya, le palak beti, matlab Rabiba ya Rabib beta. So kitab bhi hai unki, Sayyid Ja'far Murtaza Amili, hafizahullah, he's a historian and renowned scholar, written several books. So one of his famous books is Banatul Nabi Am Raba'ibuhu. That means the daughters of the Prophet or the Raba'ib of the Prophet. Raba'ib means those daughters who were raised by the Prophet, but they were not his daughters. So they were just raised in his house. So they were the daughters of Hazrat Khadija's sister. But the society calls them daughter of the Prophet because they are raised in his house. So this is called Raba'ib in Arabic. Rabiba and Raba'ib. So we discuss all that. And today's lesson is about the Al-Hudmatul Abadiyya. There are 10 people in Islam permanently haram. They become permanently haram on a person. Let me say, 10 people are haram in Islam. Some of them have the abadi hurmat, that means some of them are permanently haram. And some of them are not permanently haram, but they are haram. So basically, there are 10 people who are haram to marry in Islam. And some of them are permanently haram. And this is what we are talking about within the Muslim Ummah. Within the Muslim Ummah. Now, so we are discussing that there are 10 people who are haram. Some of them are permanently haram, some of them are not permanently haram. But that's what we are discussing within the Muslims. The first one, within the Muslim, it means that among the Muslims. Now, of course, with the kuffar, the ruling says that a Muslim man cannot marry a non-Muslim non-Muslim, non-Kitabi, woman and a Muslim woman can't marry a non-Muslim man, whether he is Kitabi or non-Kitabi. A Muslim man cannot marry a non-Muslim, non-Kitabi woman. But a Kitabi woman, he can marry with the mut'a. But, you know, not the permanent marriage according to the fatwa of most of our mujtahideen. The permanent marriage is not okay with Ahlul Kitab. Some of the mujtahideen say the permanent marriage is okay. But most of the mujtahideen say the permanent marriage is not okay with Ahlul Kitab. You can have mut'ah only. And some of the scholars have even put certain conditions on even mut'ah, you know, like fatwa of Fazlullah Sistani is that if you have first Muslim wife, you know, and now you want to marry Ahlul Kitab woman, you have to take permission from your wife, even for the mut'ah. So, you have to take permission from your first wife. So, this is about the man, the Muslim man cannot marry a non-Muslim, non-Kitabi woman, and a Muslim woman cannot marry a non-Muslim man. Whether he's Kitabi or not, in both the cases, it's not permissible, permanent or temporary. In both the cases, it's not permissible for a Muslim woman. A Muslim woman cannot be... cannot be under the walayat and governance right and the right of tasallut and rule of, because the wali of the house is the man and he has the walayat. A Muslim woman cannot be under the walayat of a kafir, because kafir has no walayat over a Muslim. And if the Muslim woman marries a kafir man, he will have a walayat over her. If a Muslim woman marries a kafir man, kafir will have walayat over a Muslim. And this is not okay in Islam. Kafir has no walayat over Muslim. So, this is just something related to... among the relationship with the non-Muslims. But right now, here we were not talking about the non-Muslims. We were here discussing the within the Muslim Ummah, like I wrote here. So there are 10 categories of people who are haram within the Muslims, among with each other. And some of them are permanently haram. They have hurmat al-abadiyya. Some of them do not, some of the cases are not permanent, some of the cases are permanent. But there are 10 cases which are haram over each other to marry within the Muslim Ummah. Now, outside the Muslim, this is the law. Now, let's go back to those 10 cases where those 10 categories which are haram on each other to marry within the Muslims. The first one is Tazweej Alal. That means marrying somebody during the condition of ihram, when you are muhrim on the whether you do the ihram for the sake of hajj or you do the ihram for the sake of umrah, or you do the ihram niyabatan from somebody in proxy of someone, niyabatan, or you do it for your own self, you're doing the ihram for your own self, or in the, you are muhrim for the sake of a mustahab hajj or mustahab umrah, or you're muhrim for the sake of a wajib hajj or wajib umrah. In all these cases, if anybody is muhrim, he has the niyat of ihram and he ends up marrying some woman, or a woman marries some man during the halat condition of ihram, that woman or that man will become permanently haram on each other as long as you have ma'al ilm bil hurma, as long as you have the knowledge that you will, that this is haram in Islam to marry within the condition of ihram, but you still go ahead and do the nikah despite the fact you knew, even though you knew it is haram, you have the ilm bil hurmat, you knew it is haram to marry in the halat of ihram, but you still continued with the nikah, then that woman or that man will become permanently haram on you. You can never, ever, ever marry with each other. And of course, the nikah is also batil. So, also, regardless of the fact the woman that you married during the ihram was muhrimah, she was also in the condition of ihram, or she was muhilla, that means she was outside of ihram niyat, that means she was not in the niyat of ihram. Somebody who is not in the niyat of ihram is called muhil. For a woman we say muhilla. For somebody who is in the niyat of ihram we call him muhrim. For a woman we call muhrima. So whether the woman was muhrima in the niyat of ihram or she was muhilla, not in the niyat of ihram, in all the cases, she will become permanently haram on the man. And likewise, if a woman does the same thing, ma'al ilm bil hurma, knowingly that it is haram in Islam to marry during ihram, the man will become permanently haram on her. So, is it clear? Doesn't matter which one is. You know, if you are muhrim, if you as a man, you marry a woman and you are muhrim, whether she is a muhrim or not, that doesn't matter. But if you are a muhrim and you marry a woman and you are muhrim, it will become haram on you if you knew ma'al ilm bil hurma. If you knew that it is haram in Islam to marry during the halat of ihram, but you still went ahead and you married, that woman will become permanently haram. Likewise, if a woman is muhrima and she knew that it's haram in Islam to marry during the niyat of ihram, but she still goes and she marries a man, whether the man is muhrim or not, doesn't matter, but she is muhrim, so it's haram, that man will become permanently haram on her. No, that tawaf doesn't matter. Tawaf doesn't matter. Muhrim means when you... Ihram means that we do the niyat at the miqat. We have the miqat, that means there are certain points which are defined when we are entering into the limits of haram, of haram. So haram is hududul haram. Hududul haram, like let's suppose the Masjidul Haram, you know, and this is the Safa wal Marwa. So let's suppose this is the city of Makkah. Let's suppose this is the Masjidul Haram. This is the city of Makkah, city limits. Now outside the city limits, there's a huge area which is called, actually this is the hudud of haram. Hudud of haram does not mean the city limits. Hudud of haram does not mean the city limits. Hudud of haram is huge area in the desert, which is all part of the Haram. And in those hudud, there are certain points which are defined as miqat. So those people who are coming from Sham, their miqat is different. Those who are coming from Iraq, their in Iran, that side, their miqat is different. Those who are coming from like Yemen, their miqat is different. So those who are coming from Medina, their miqat is different. So all those mawaqit, miqat, are assigned at the border of the Haram, which is border of the Haram is in the desert. So as soon as you reach the border of the Haram, one of the miqat, you before that you take your stitched dress off and you wear two pieces of cloth of ihram. And after that, you enter, like if you're coming from Medina, you go to the Masjid al-Shajara. So you take the stitched clothes off before you enter the masjid. You already take the stitched clothes off, you know, and now you enter into the masjid. So you do the niyat that, you know, of course in the qalb, you don't have to say, but you do the niyat that I'm doing this ihram for whatever, for Umrah al-Tamattu, or for the sake of Hajj al-Tamattu. If it is your first Hajj, you say Hajj al-Islam also, wajib qurbatan ilallah. You do the niyat. So, and you basically, as soon as you do the niyat, then you say labbaik, Allahumma labbaik, labbaik la sharika laka, labbaik. This is wajib to say. Inna alhamda wa ni'mata laka wal mulk la sharika laka, labbaik. That is mustahab. But what is wajib is labbaik, Allahumma labbaik, labbaik la sharika laka, labbaik. This is wajib. So this way we do the niyat of ihram. Niyat of ihram, ihram does not mean the dress. Ihram means the niyat. When we say somebody is muhrim, means he did the niyat of ihram. Yeah, it's a shart. It's another secondary thing that basically when you do the niyat of ihram, you should not wear any stitched dress. So that's why we take the stitched dress off and wear two pieces of cloth which is unstitched before we do the niyat of ihram, because if we do the niyat of ihram and then we take the dress off, we already did one haram, because it's haram to wear the stitched dress during the niyat of ihram. So we already take it off before that. So, but that's a different haram. Because of the sake of haram, we take it off. But the ihram is not the dress. Some people think ihram is the dress. This is the libas al ihram. This is not ihram. Ihram means the niyat.
They
sometimes you can do the nazar. It's allowed. You can do the nazar far away, like people here need do the niyat of ihram from Dubai. So they do the niyat nazar, you know, and because of the nazar, they do the ihram from there. And so in that case, they don't have to stop at Masjid al-Shajara, for instance, or at the
Miqat. So their ihram started from Dubai. Then in this case,
Because of the nazar.
Oh, okay.
So basically, it is clear that Hudud of Haram is not the city of Makkah. Hudud of Haram is outside the city of Makkah in the desert.
And the
Miqat are those places which are on the border of the Hudud where you have to, which is assigned for different areas from Hujjaj who are coming from different sides of Islamic Ummah. They have to go to that Miqat. Miqat. So we went into a different tangent of discussion of Hajj. So basically, what we are discussing is those people who are haram to marry within the Muslim Ummah. So the first category is if you marry some person during the niyat of ihram, ma'al ilm bil hurma, that means knowingly that it is haram in Islam to marry during the ihram condition, but you still do the marriage. In that case, that woman becomes, or that man becomes permanently haram on you.
If you didn't know,
then the nikah is batil, but the woman will not be permanently haram. The nikah is batil during the niyat of ihram, but the woman will not be permanently haram. Is it clear?
Mm-hmm.
If the nikah is batil, he doesn't have the right to have any sexual relationship. Well, and you have to know, and you have to stop it as soon as you know. Well, is the hukum. It's not, of course, it's not wajib in Islam. It's not wajib to do mutah in Islam. It's not haram either. It is not wajib. It's mustahab in Islam, not wajib. Even nikah is not wajib in Islam. I mean, the marriage, regular marriage, is not wajib in Islam. It's mustahab. It's mustahabun mu'akkad. It becomes wajib as hukmu thanawi, secondary ruling. If you think you can fall into a haram, then it becomes wajib to marry to keep away from the possible haram. So, let's move forward to the second category. Second category is al-li'an. Li'an is another reason why one person becomes haram on another. Al-li'an. Li'an. Li'an means sending la'nat on each other. This is a ruling of fiqh. This is a technical term. It's istilah that we use in our fiqh. We have a whole chapter in our fiqh, Kitab Babul Li'an, where we learn the rules of mula'ana and li'an. So, li'an is a term that we use in our fiqh. Li'an means if a husband sees his wife doing zina with somebody, husband has no witness. There is no other person available, only him. So he can bear witness alone. And since he doesn't have the witness, so what he would do, the li'an has several conditions. So when he would go to the Islamic court and the qadi, he will be asked to do. Of course, if he is alleging his wife with zina, and he claims that he saw it himself and there are no other witnesses, and he denies the child which was born, he says this child does not belong to me, so in that case the Hakim al-Shar, the Qadi, will ask him to do the Li'an according to certain conditions, shurut of Li'an. And after the, when he would send La'nat on the Kazib, on the liar, he would claim that I saw it, and you know, so basically when he says, so he would say La'nat on the liar. So if he himself is the liar, La'nat of Allah will come on him. So he will say the la'nat on the liar in front of the qadi. And after doing this li'an according to the shara'it, there will be no haddul qadh on the husband. Qadh means accusation, accusing somebody of doing tuhmat on somebody. So qadh is haram, putting the tuhmat of zina on any man or any woman is haram in Islam, and there's a had for that. So if you do the tuhmat on somebody, you will be, there's a had in Islam, there's a punishment for that. You cannot accuse somebody of zina. So the tuhmat, the had and punishment of the tuhmat of zina will be applicable on the husband if he doesn't do the li'an. You know, you don't have any witness, and you are accusing your wife of zina. So basically this will be counted as tuhmat, unless he enters into the stage of, well, he goes to the qadi and says, well, I am and the only witness, and I am ready to do the li'an according to its conditions. So Qazi will accept the li'an according to its conditions. If he doesn't do according to those conditions, that will be counted as qasf and tuhmat and accusing the wife of zina. So the husband will be punished because for that qasf and tuhmat. But because of li'an, if he performs the li'an in front of the qazi, the punishment of tuhmat will be removed from the husband, and his statement will be, is taken in officially, and there will be no punishment upon the husband for the tuhmat of zina, because that whatever he is saying, that sending the la'na from the, because of the mula'ana thing, in other words. So basically, he's sending the la'na on the liar. And after doing the li'an, the punishment of tuhmat of zina is also removed from the husband, and he won't be liable for any punishment of tuhmat. Plus, he will no longer be liable of the nafaka of the child. The sustenance of the child will no longer fall on the neck of the husband, because he is denying this, not my child. So he is not liable of the nafaka of that child which he is denying. And that woman will then be considered as permanently haram on him to marry. He can never ever marry his wife again after the mula'ana. After the la'nat thing according to its conditions in front of the Islamic court. So li'an is one of the ways how a woman or a man, becomes haram on each other. And that is permanently haram forever. Place where it's not allowed, it has hurmat of marriage in Islam is nikah al-shighar. It's haram, and the nikah is also batil. This was a tradition of Jahiliyyah and in that Arabian peninsula. Those Arabs of Jahiliyyah, they used to do this, that they used to say, I marry my daughter to you upon the condition that you marry your daughter to me. So, and there is no mehr involved. This kind, or I marry my sister to you upon the condition that you marry your sister to me. That was a tradition of Jahiliyyah. There is no mehr involved. So this was called nikah al-shighar, and this is not permissible in Islam. This kind of nikah is batil, and it's not ja'iz, it's haram. So without, there is no mehr involved, like I said. So this kind of situation, if somebody tries to enter in this kind of situation, it's not allowed to have any relationship with that woman, or the woman is not allowed to have any relationship with the man.
I'll marry my daughter to you, your son, and you marry your son to my daughter. Would that still be counted in a similar fashion, or does it have to be individuals?
Yeah, with mehr it's not a problem.
So even this kind of a thing where you marry your sister to me and I marry my sister to you, if mehr is involved, fine.
Yeah. If the mehr is involved, then of course the consent of the sister or daughter. There is no mehr, there is no aqd without the jabr and with forcing. There is no force in Islam. So if the sister also agrees, and or the daughter also agrees, and there's a mehr involved, then it's a legitimate nikah. Because it's done with consent, plus there is a mehr. But if there is no mehr, except, you know, I'm not going to pay anything, I'm just basically exchanging. This kind of exchange has no legitimacy in Islam. It's not mashru, it's not legitimate.
One of them get divorced and the guy was just divorced.
Yeah, so it happens.
Happened this one all the time.
Yeah, it happens. No, even, you know, even if the thing is that even basically, you know, mahar is the right of a woman. She has to be paid some gift money or gift valuable thing, whatever has some market value, from starting from 1 cent to whatever is decided with the consent of both the parties. So, of course, less mehr is promoted in Islam. It should not be more. More mehr is basically condemned. But this is another unfortunate thing that we see in our Islamic cultures. I would say it's not Islamic teaching, it's Islamic cultural additive that we have added in our Islamic countries. Increase the mehr of the woman.
The mehr needs to have some monetary value. Some cannot be that I would. So if you say I would be your gardening, you have to think that you have to. Putting an example, services can be mehr also, or you have to have a second thing.
Well, if the services has some value to it in the market, anything which has some price tag that she would have paid to get that, she would have to pay to get that. Like she can say, well, my mehr is just take me to the ziyarat of Mahfuzan and Salaam. So she would have paid to go to buy a ticket and all those things for Karbala or for Hajj or for Umrah, or buy me a Quran, for instance. Some people put Quran as mehr. That's okay, Quran also has a market value, you know, you have to pay this much money in the market to buy it. Anything which has a market value, it can be one flower. If you buy a nice flower from the shop, it's not free, it has a market value. So anything which has a market value.
And services, meaning remodeling, house.
Yeah, that has a lot of market value.
Market value,
you know, $500,
so
$1,000, $10,000.
Services can be offered as long as those services have market.
Yeah, if it has a market value that she would have to pay to get it, that's the value in the market. That he says, well, I will do the job for you, you don't have to pay that much amount, that's your mehr, I will do it for you. So that it has a market value, it's fine.
Most of mehr, like, especially in India, Pakistan, mehr issue doesn't come until, like, not like normally paid kind of upfront.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is wrong in
so
our culture.
So it's not normally paid upfront like the day of the nikah. It's normally, unfortunately, if there is like talaq or something, which, oh, kind
right.
Yeah, mehr is used as a barrier for talaq.
Right.
Which is not actually a barrier for talaq. And mehr is used as our social status symbol. Yeah, but both are, that's the society says, our culture, the culture says to mehr, but in Islam, as soon as the aqd is done, he can demand the mu'ajjal straight away.
Even
mu'akhal, she can demand straight away from
the
aqd. Yeah, not advance, after the aqd. As soon as the aqd is done, before aqd, you can call it mu'akhal, that's your choice. As soon as the aqd is done, she can demand the mu'akhar from you. This is our culture that says mu'ajjal and mu'akhar. That's our culture. Sharia says mehr belongs to the woman. As soon as the aqd takes place, before the aqd, you can call it mu'ajjal and mu'akhar. That's your choice. Now that the aqd has happened, the aqd is there. She has the right. Mehr belongs to me in Islam. Give me the mehr. You have to give it. You're going to say, I'll give it after 10 years. Who picks 10 years? It's not Islam.
In the Amdut Talaq,
in the talab, yeah, and we say it like this.
So the meher is basically
in the talab, so whenever she demands, she can demand straight away after the abd. She has the right to demand straight away after the abd.
Culturally, it's like considered, you know, kind of
bad, huh?
No, no, you know, it's only, you know,
she doesn't have to demand, right? It's up to her.
Yeah, even if she, even she doesn't demand, the husband should pay himself. That's hers.
So the question is, if you kind of promise something like, meher is a jarat, can you like pay the value right now? Do you have to take her for jarat, or you can kind of pay the value of that jarat?
Well, if you fix that, I will basically make sure that you can go for the ziyarah. If that's the kind of meher you fixed, then you can pay the amount to her and arrange for with the kafila, talk with the kafila, make her reservations and bookings for all the way and coming back, and make all the arrangements, give her the sustenance and expenses inside in Karbala, and hotel stay and food stay and all food serve, you know, expenses and all that. Make all the arrangements for her so that she can go and live there respectively and come back easily. That's fine. You did the job.
So basically,
it's not necessary on you to go with her, if you know, if you fix the meher, that I'll just make sure, make the arrangements for your ziyarat of Karbala. That's fine. So you made the arrangements. Well, making arrangements, I don't think a woman will put it in the meher to make arrangement for me. What is put in the meher is the amount which matters. Arrangement she can make herself also, you know, that's the way it goes usually. Or she can ask somebody, you ask the kafila person to make arrangement for the food and the hotel reservation. The head of the kafila can always do that. They do it. So I don't think it's a matter of concern for her or anybody who wants to go, because that's the job of the head of the kafila. He makes all the arrangements for all the zuwar. So what matters is the expenses. So basically, we should basically pay the meher on the first night to the wife. This belongs to her. And meher should be less. From the wife's side, there has to be, you know, i'tidal in Islam. There's i'tidal in all the things, you know, but there are the hadith of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says that la tughalu the muhur in nisa فتكتسب العداوة. Don't increase the meher of the woman, otherwise you would gain enmity. So if you increase the meher, this will cause enmity. So basically, Islam has condemned high meher, and some Islamic countries we find this is a very bad tradition, raising meher so high, so much high that the husband is unable to pay. So why do you agree? Why do you agree to pay that much meher? You should not agree in this. This is something wrong in Islam. I mean, it's not haram for the woman to do, but it is condemned. It's jaiz, but it is condemned, you know. Islam does not promote it. So, but some people do it, you know, and this is impractical, because when you're raising this much meher, first of all, it's hard to find a husband who can pay that much, who would agree to pay that much. Second of all, even if he agrees, practically it's almost impossible for him, or very, very much, very, very hard for him to pay. And that's one of the reasons why people don't pay the meher. Because it's so high. They should not agree. The problem is not at the beginning, don't agree with the meher. So there has to be i'tidal in these things, you know. On one hand, there's ifrat and tafreet, you know, two extremes in our Islamic societies. Some people raise the meher too high. This is also condemned. Some people never pay the mehar. This is another extreme. You should pay the mehar on the first night, and she should not raise the mehar. It has to be i'tidal from both the sides. Sallallahu ala sayyidina Nabiyyina Muhammad wa ala sahbihi wa sallam. We'll discuss the rest of the...